Well, good afternoon. I'm here to present an insider's perspective on Microsoft security. Please hold your laughter until afterwards. I take advantage of the easy jokes, as you'll find very quickly here. So I'll talk a little bit more about myself at the end. How about jump right in here? As I've discovered in the last day or so, this is a predominantly Unix and Linux-oriented crowd, I believe. Forgive me for those of you that have implemented Microsoft technologies in your environments. I'm sure there are a few of you. You know that these are interesting times. I have some news clippings here of note. Microsoft's corporate network was supposedly broken into, listed in the Washington Post there, and somebody got near their source code and caused quite a stir. That wonderful online periodical, The Register, continues to poke fun at Microsoft, and there's one of the articles there from The Register about an issue with Universal Plug and Play and Windows XP, which was a somewhat timely announcement during the launch of Windows XP a few months ago. And then down the lower right there, we have a Wired news article about a paper published by a gentleman named Mark Slemko about problems with Microsoft's wallet service. And then there's the ever-famous Gartner announcement of don't use Microsoft's web server down there on the left. So, any of you are familiar with these issues? And those of you that have implemented Microsoft technologies in your environments may have the sensation at times that you've jumped out of a perfectly good airplane. Hence my little skydivers there in the lower right. It's a little subtle, but. So what is the reality? Is the sky really falling with Microsoft? What claims are over-sensationalized? How do you separate the hype from reality and get back to doing business? Because that's, after all, supposedly what this is all about. So I'm here to tell you today that I don't think the sky is falling, but you still have to be wary of the occasional large falling object. And I'll show you in today's presentation how to nimbly get out of the way of a couple of those large objects and where to stand so that you don't get hit in the future. By necessity, with the time slot that I have, I will only talk about a couple of these large objects. You know, given 4 days, we could probably go into a lot more fun detail. But hopefully we'll have some time at the end for you to ask questions about any of the large objects that I've missed. So the basic agenda for today is to talk about the biggest threats as I've seen them and some countermeasures. Just a little slide into the introduction. I've written a book called Hacked and Exposed, and this is the basic premise of the book that I've written. Show people what the threats are and show them how to fix them. It's sort of been proven traditionally in security that this is the most effective way to get people's interest in security, and then of course, not to be a pessimist all the time, show them how to fix the problems that you ultimately reveal to them. So that's the strategy I'll take today. So the biggest threats. And where does this insider's perspective come from? Well, over the last 4 years, I have been professionally looking at security of many aspects of Microsoft as a corporation, their corporate infrastructures, their online properties, MSN, Hotmail, Passport, web applications, both internal and external, and their products. I've done a lot of product security reviews for them. I have a couple of links in the slides to some of the work that has been published. There's been a lot of work that hasn't been published. So the following slides are based on this experience of mine over the last 4 years. And I've changed some of the names to protect the not-so-innocent. And just to sort of name the usual suspects here very quickly, the biggest threats tend to fall in these sorts of categories, and these aren't new to many people. Programming flaws, software, and security are like oil and water sometimes, many of you think, and Microsoft, of course, being the biggest software developer in the world, is subject to that rule. And also there are, I would say, poor design come in second there. I say ill-conceived and undocumented features, and we'll look at a couple of those today. And of course, another one of the big issues with Microsoft technologies, and all technologies are default insecure configuration. So people unwrap their shiny new PC, put it on the network, and it's wide open. So tons of stuff. And these are not necessarily ranked according to severity or occurrence, although they're pretty close. So my presentation is going to focus on a network security assessment of the product security reviews I've done, web application security reviews. This is sort of one of the most straightforward illustrations of where these problems sort of fit in an environment and how much trouble they can lead to. So here you have a stereotypical organization with an internet connection, a firewall, a DMZ, and then an internal network. And when looking at Microsoft technologies, we typically take some of these large threat categories that I've seen and specific examples of exploits within those categories, and we chain them together through a process called vulnerability linkage to basically attain compromise of the whole organization. So as I mentioned, I'm going to talk about a couple of large falling objects, and these are the two that I'm going to talk about. And these are the two that are typically used in a penetration test against the Microsoft technologies to achieve total organizational compromise. Exploits of Microsoft's web server, Internet Information Services, IIS. And there's another topic called LSA Secrets, a feature of the Windows operating system that allows us to make that last hop into the internal network that I'll talk about in a moment. So IIS exploits, there have been many over the years, and if you look at them, with a couple of exceptions, the most severe have focused on some libraries that Microsoft adds as add-on modules to their web servers called ISAPI DLLs. And these have been the main foci for attacks of the last 5 years. Some of you may remember the IIS hack, buffer overflow, going back almost 4 years ago. And that has really been the sort of the starting point for the tradition of blowing up Microsoft's web server. And that is really where attackers focus a lot of their effort, and they publish these exploits, and the community takes advantage of them. And this is an example of one of those buckets of threats that I mentioned earlier about Microsoft technologies. Thank you. I thought it was just my vision or my bad angle here, so I apologize if you missed some bullet points there. And again, as I was saying, Microsoft ships their web server with some of these modules enabled by default, and that's really, again, an example of default insecure configurations, and they get nailed for this. Certainly, organizations that I've worked for have nailed them in network penetration reviews against these features. So there are published vulnerabilities that exist in several of these DLLs that ship with IIS. And one of the most severe to date has been Internet Printing Protocol Buffer Overflow. It's also known as the IPP or dot printer problem that most of you are probably familiar with. And I'm going to talk about this just briefly as a stereotypical example of a programming flaw in a Microsoft technology that results from a default insecure configuration. So as I mentioned, we're chaining sort of vulnerabilities together. This is somewhat old, but there are newer examples, and I'll talk about some of those in a moment. But here's the basic strategy. Microsoft has implemented the ability to print to devices through a web server through a DLL. It's named here. It's an ISAPI DLL. And this functionality is enabled in Windows 2000 by default. You install Windows 2000 unless you muck with the configuration. IIS will show up enabled, and this printing functionality will be enabled by default as soon as you put the system on the network. It's very simple, trivial in fact, to send a malformed request for a .printer file that will invoke this DLL. It will call it into existing in memory, but it will basically send that request to that DLL that to process the request. And with a little bit of malice aforethought and a little research on your hacker website of choice, you can find that malforming the request in a specific way can cause a buffer overflow, the hacker's magic bullet for making software blow up and executing arbitrary commands in a privileged process. So that, again, this typifies the standard ISAPI DLL buffer overflow attack. And here is how you actually would implement an attack like this. It's quite simple. You can use a tool like Netcat. Many of you may be familiar with that. It can open a network listener on a machine, as I've done there in the first step, on port 3003. This would be run on the attacker's machine somewhere out on the internet. And then you download one of these hacker tools. One of the exploits released for this buffer overflow, this dot printer issue, was called Jill. There was a Jill Win32 version issued for those people on Windows that couldn't compile the Linux code originally. So, you know, life is easy if you're a script kiddie. And you launch this Windows exploit against the victim server, which I call victim, on port 80, and then you give the IP address of the attacker's machine and the listener on which you're listening with Netcat. And what happens is this sends a malicious dot printer request with some arbitrary commands bundled into it. It blows up the DLL on the victim web server and executes those commands under the system account privilege. And what that does then is that it uses that, the command that it runs basically fires a shell back to the attacker's system. And you see what you have in the lower right, the bottom of the slide there, you basically get a Windows shell prompt on the attacker's system. And if you run a tool like Who Am I, which is in the Windows Resource Kit, you'll find that the shell is running in the context of the Windows system account, which is all powerful on the local machine. So you essentially own this machine. Some interesting things about this attack is that the victim server is actually connecting outbound to the attacker system. And for those of you that are familiar with the concept of egress filtering, you'll see right away a countermeasure for this. But time and again, I've experienced in my use of this tool that most organizations don't consider outbound traffic as a threat. They build a firewall and they think about inbound stuff most of the time. That's sort of the mentality. But a simple egress filter here would probably put a stop to this sort of attack. Another interesting thing to note is that the initial exploit, the initial command that gets sent, occurs right over HTTP, so if you're not blocking that to your web servers, which you're probably not, your firewall is going to be rendered somewhat useless, at least to the initial command. And this is a common issue that we're facing a lot nowadays. I'll talk more about application-level attacks in a moment. Microsoft patched this vulnerability in Service Pack 2, so anybody that's not running the patch is vulnerable to this. So if you've got, especially on internal networks, alarmingly, this looks like an internet-based attack, and it was very prevalent for a while, of course, until people began patching it. I find this most often now on internal networks, though, because again, you have people that, you know, they buy new machines, they have a Windows 2000 base installed. They're throwing those machines out of the network as prototypes or test servers or internal internet web servers. They don't really care about security. And these machines all have this vulnerability, and you can just cut through them like a hot knife through butter. So I mentioned that the dot printer is coming up on 2 years old here. So certainly to drive home the point that this is not a problem that simply will go away with time, other ISAPI DLLs have been found to have problems of this nature subsequent to the dot printer issue. Many of you are familiar with the Code Red worm. That was based on a buffer overflow in another ISAPI DLL. It had a different file type request, but basically I have a tool that does the exact same thing as the Jill exploit that I showed you with a machine that is not patched for Code Red. There is another ISAPI DLL that you can invoke by requesting .htr files. .htr has been a known issue with IIS for a long time now, and recently there was a buffer overflow found with that. More seriously, there was a buffer overflow found in the ASP ISAPI DLL, which is basically the interpreter for active server pages. So anybody that's using active server pages for their web applications was faced with having to patch this issue, because you kind of can't shut off the ASP interpreter if that's how your application is built. So basically, just to highlight here, that all of these issues that have happened subsequently to dot printer have the same attack paradigm, And they work on machines that have been patched without printer. So it's not enough to simply patch these things. So at this point, we have complete control of a machine on the periphery of an organization. I've colored our web server red here. We have a remote shell. We're in control, basically like a marionette on a string. And this is a common paradigm. Now we can use that machine and turn it against the organization, attack the organization's infrastructure sort of from the inside. And one of the features of Microsoft's operating system that makes this next step trivial is something called LSA secrets. So Windows NT 2000, XP, and .NET Server has this thing in the registry, this portion of the registry called the LSA secrets cache. And it caches some interesting information there. It's about 4K in size, so you can't store a lot of data there. But Microsoft publishes the APIs for writing data. You have to be a privileged account to get into that portion of the registry. But one of the things that Windows does naturally is that it caches the passwords for service accounts in the LSA secret store, and it caches them in clear text. So a service account in Windows parlance is a user account that's used to start a process in an unattended fashion. So let's say you have a web server that you want to start up when the machine boots. You're not going to have somebody physically log into the machine and start the web server. You have to have a user account that process runs under, and that user account has to log in an unattended fashion. So how do you log in? Well, you leave the password somewhere on the machine. It's sort of a chicken and egg problem. The problem is that Microsoft leaves the password in clear text. So as you can see, this may lead to some serious problems, as we'll see in a moment. There's a tool called LSADump2 that allows you to access the LSA secrets cache and extract these passwords in their clear text form. There's a URL there. It's at nmrc.org if you want to check that out. You have to be an administrator equivalent to run this tool. So it's not like you can just walk up and do this to any Windows machine. But as you've seen from our hypothetical attack here, we have system-level control of a web server. So by uploading this code and running it, we have the privileges to look in the LSA secrets cache. So although Microsoft highlights the privilege level that you need in order to run this tool as a defense against this, it really doesn't wash, because even though you may have to be administrator on the specific machine where you run this tool, as we'll see in a moment, the information that you gather puts other machines on the network at risk. And this is the typical scenario that we see this occur. I've overlaid our sort of physical level network here with the logical description of the Windows environment above that. So you can see in the very, I'll work from the top down here. So on the top, we have an NT4 domain that lives in our DMZ, and it has a trust relationship with a Windows 2000 forest that lives on the internal network, probably a typical scenario in many environments. And that in that Windows 2000 domain, I call it a domain, you have an account, a domain admin level account, that is used to start an antivirus service. So this is a process that needs to start in an unattended fashion on every machine in the domain. So this service account, which is a domain admin equivalent, needs to log in an unattended fashion. So in the Windows world, its password is stored in the LSA secrets cache. So we've compromised our web server. Our web server is running this antivirus service. Therefore, it has the domain admin's password cached on the local machine. So we simply upload our LSADump2 tool, we run it, and there's some sample output there. You can see the name of the service, antivirus agent, I call it here, and then the password shows up in clear text simply by running the tool in the context of that compromised web server. So without really struggling very hard, we've compromised a highly privileged account on the internal network simply by compromising an external web server on the periphery of the organization. So we can simply, given appropriate access control or lack thereof on this internal router that segments the DMZ from the rest of the network, we can simply log into machines on the internal network now from the compromised web server as a domain admin equivalent. Game, set, match, as they say. And at this point, we begin roaming around the internal network and looking for what have you. HR data, source code, intellectual property, for lack of a better word, that's relevant to the organization and potentially valuable. So, as I mentioned, I've talked about a very simple, straightforward scenario for organizational compromise here, some of the larger falling objects. There are several items that I've kind of left on the cutting room floor in order to give you a brief and efficient overview of what I see a lot in Microsoft security. So some of the things that I have not talked about today that I think are important to at least mention very quickly before I talk about countermeasures are listed here. Application level flaws are, I think, becoming more and more of the bread and butter of the hacker community, the intruders, attackers, whatever you want to call them. Increasingly, as I've highlighted already, the firewall is programmed to allow HTTP 80 through to a web application. You really can't shut that off if you want to have a functional web application. And more attackers are taking advantage of flaws at the application layer that are typically custom coded by organizations that have the only application. So no longer is the blame solely in Microsoft's court. You have individual organizations that are customizing apps. They're making all the same mistakes that other vendors have over the years, and they're making them in much larger ways. So I think it's very important to consider applications, particularly web applications, which predominate today, when you think about other avenues of entry into the organization. Of course, no discussion of Microsoft security would be complete without mention of email worms. I think we've seen a lot of some, I would call them frivolous, although those of you that administer systems certainly take it very seriously and know about downtime and mail servers going down. But I think at this point we've been lucky with things like NIMDA and Sercam and these funny little names that we show up that have shown up in the press, that somebody hasn't actually targeted an organization with a worm that will specifically go out, look for specific data, and take it back out of the organization. That may have already happened and it just hasn't reached the mainstream media yet, but I think that you're really looking at a very serious vector of attack there. And again, the firewall lets that right through. I mean, if you think about avenues into the organization, you can go right to a user's desktop with an email. SQL Server exploits have become more and more prevalent. I think if you look at Microsoft technologies, Microsoft technology deployments, there's always going to be SQL Server around. The way that SQL Server has traditionally been deployed has left it vulnerable to a couple of different attacks, blank system admin passwords. And once you get into SQL Server, you'll find typically that the way it is deployed is it runs at a very high level of privilege, which allows you basically to take over that machine through the SQL Server process and very easily use it as a launching point for other attacks. So SQL Server is a big target. And then last but not least, I think one of the traditional kind of old school ways of breaking into Windows has been through the file and print sharing services, which are underlied by a technology called Server Message Block, or SMB. And those are still very prevalent lines of attack if those services are available. So definitely you have to watch out for those. We see those less frequently nowadays. People are actually learning to block out file and print sharing with firewalls or turn it off. So let's talk about countermeasures quickly. So for those of you that are perhaps new to some of these exploits, you may have a somewhat of a sensation of free fall. As most people in security all often do, you feel outgunned, understaffed, overwhelmed. What can you do in order to prevent these problems and get some sleep at night? So I break up my discussion into tactical and strategic countermeasures. There are things that you should do immediately to sort of shut the barn door, and then there are long-term processes that need to be put in place that many of you are probably familiar with. So from a tactical countermeasure standpoint, the philosophy that we espouse in Hackney Exposed is fix the 20% of the problem that caused 80% of the serious trouble. And I've outlined a couple of them here today. So let's apply this philosophy to these two areas, IIS and LSA secrets. These point fixes must be made. Again, the barn door has to be shut, even though the horse may already be gone. If you don't fix these problems, you're just inviting more and more people to walk through that door. So one of the things that I find amazing at this late date, I mentioned that ISAPI DLL buffer overflows and other problems with ISAPI DLLs have had about a 5-year history. And for almost that entire 5-year period, most security experts have recommended disabling ISAPI DLLs out of the box. Again, a big category of Microsoft flaws is out of the box functionality that's insecure. So you have to learn to harden these things before you deploy them on the network. And that process is called unmapping ISAPI DLLs, and I'll leave sort of the technical underpinnings of that to people in your environment, hopefully, that know how to do that. I think even if you do harden a machine, as we saw with some of these ISAPI DLL issues, you have to keep up with patches. For those of you that are running applications based on active server pages, if there is a flaw in the ASP DLL, you can't just shut that off because it breaks your app. So you're left with the prospect of having to patch the machine. And clearly, any Microsoft technology has to be backed up with a very active patch management program. We mentioned network ingress filtering. Clearly, have a firewall. Don't put Windows machines out on the network without some sort of network access control. I'd recommend defense in depth and have host-based access control as well. And don't forget egress filtering. It may seem overly simple to many of you, but I think that time and again, a common paradigm for exploiting web servers is to compromise a web server and get the web server to send out some other communication to the attacker. If you have adequate and very harsh egress filters where you're letting out nothing but legitimate responses from the machine in question, you basically put a stop to a whole class of these sorts of problems. Another bullet point I have there is to deploy your web virtual file systems, your web virtual roots, on a secure non-system drive. And this is sort of meant to prevent another class of problems that have popped up in IIS recently called directory traversal exploits, where attackers will walk up out of the web root and into system directories and run things like the command shell. A common countermeasure for that is to move your virtual directories and put them on a D drive, for example, and get them off of the system drive so that these directory traversal exploits don't work as they're supposed to. And then there are some other sort of more technical and finer points with Windows IIS security. And there's a checklist for IIS 5 security that I recommend you check out on Microsoft's website. I think with these four, you're in pretty good shape, but certainly there are other details certainly to consider when hardening a system for use on the internet. And last but not least, you can use the Gartner reports to stoke the furnaces in the boiler room or give them to a big X accounting firm for shredding.
Here, here.
No offense to Gartner. I think they were a little premature on that. All kinds of technologies have had problems over the years. I don't personally think the answer is to shut it off. The answer has always been to fix it. Here's four bullet points. It's not that hard. If you're deploying any technology, you should know how to secure it. I think hiding your head in the sand is not well recommended. A couple other tactical countermeasures for IIS. Recently, I've been looking at a tool that Microsoft publishes called URL Scan. It's part of their IIS lockdown tool. You can't extract it separately from that tool. It's really kind of like an IIS firewall. Funnily enough, it's based on an ISAPI DLL, so that makes you think a little bit. Hopefully, there won't be a problem there. And it does act as a firewall that sits in front of IIS, and it will look at requests coming in. And you can configure a text file to tell it how to handle those requests. So if you don't want to handle requests for .printer files, you basically write in the text files, just drop those requests, and it basically throws them in the bit bucket. No response is given. And there's a whole other set of criteria that you can use to drop it, and it covers almost all of the common known exploits against IIS to date. So certainly something you should take a look at. Also, I recommend ongoing assessment and patch management. Microsoft publishes a tool called the Baseline Security Analyzer, MBSA. for short, that currently looks for known vulnerabilities with Windows machines, and they're going to integrate patch management into that as well. So it's something to keep your eye on. And then, of course, always